Chapter 15, Nighthawks.
Hello and welcome to Cry Me a Riverdale, your favorite Archie fan base podcast ever. I'm your sweet boy host number one, John Reisinger, and joining me is sweet boy host number two, Mikey Newman.
I will give that intro a 4 out of 10.
What? No!
You were leaning pretty hard on the shtick there. Anyway, I did not realize when we named this podcast Cry Me to Riverdale that the show is actually going to make us cry all the time in the second season. Hey, here's an idea. Stop killing people. I don't know. Just throwing that out.
I like that. The entire first season of Riverdale is, hey, care about all these people. Season
and now two they're is, going down.
We're killing them all. Say goodbye.
Yeah, is this like all a sort of under the table remake of Series 7 or Battle Royale, or like is there something I don't know? Do they not know they're in the Hunger Games? Is that
maybe actually
the issue?
This entire time there's actually been a phone number you're supposed to be texting to make sure your person stays alive the whole time. Did you not know that, Mikey? I've been furiously texting for Jughead for like days now.
Yeah, Singular Wireless, the sponsors of that vote. I was trying to think of like who sponsored the American Idol votes, because it was always whoever was in fourth place, you know?
Yeah.
So chapter 15, Nighthawks. I did make a note that I'm guessing that this will have to do with spending a lot of time at the diner at night. But I did make a side bet that actually they were just referencing something they had no intent on actually doing anything with, and it was the latter. This is sort of about a diner, but not really.
That's the Riverdale naming convention. It's just like we spun a wheel and there was words.
Yeah, I'm like, what specific reference are we gonna make and then completely ignore Riverdale? Whoosh.
We start off with a Chuck dub.
We get the previously on, which recaps all of our shooting and death in Riverdale, and then the Chuck dub. Yeah.
And then the Jug Dub, and we get a picture of Pop Shop. He's got tagging on his shop that says Death Diner. And his shop's not doing well, but then we go really quick to the Andrews house, where Archie is like double-fisting Red Bulls and burning breakfast and trying to go full bore on like a home care person and protection unit, and he's burning candle on both ends.
Do you remember that scene in The Iron Giant where Hogarth gets coffee for the first time, and then he's just like, and then this thing, and then this, and that's essentially who Archie is in this scene. Apparently he just discovered caffeine.
And then his dad comes down to check on him, and he's like, no, I can take care of you. But then, like, he gets a phone call he's got to excuse himself for, because he gets a phone call back from the sheriff's office, but it's not from the sheriff. And apparently he's been trying to get a hold of the sheriff. So he's trying to get stuff done, and the sheriff is not, you know, surprise.
I don't want to say that Archie is back to trying to put into practice plans he has not thought through very well, but because he's like reaching out. And I'm like, wow, the sheriff's being a dick. But his whole thing is, let me patrol with you.
Yeah. Let me put these flyers up.
Like, just sit down for like half a second, please.
That's a really quick scene. And then we go to the lodges where my boy Smithers is trying to be a good man. And he tries to help Ronnie avoid her dad by like motioning her to a side entrance, but doesn't work because daddy comes in and he's trying to get Ronnie to talk to him and wants to have a family dinner, to which Ronnie says, how about never?
Yeah. She, I think, overplays her hand a bit in this scene. And by a bit, I mean she's literally playing poker face up, which is not... I mean, this guy's a criminal mastermind.
Yeah.
This is not the person with which you should F with, so to speak.
Yeah. But she's not... She's definitely still 100% not on daddy's side.
And they're definitely beefing, and they took this in an interesting direction. Though, Hiram gets some interesting developments in this episode.
Yes.
We'll get to those. But we move to the Scoobies outside at a picnic table, I think.
Yeah, they're at school.
I just mostly wrote that the scene felt odd. Like, this one felt really off to me because they were all sort of, they were all talking to each other only about the thing they cared about. So they were responding to each other only about their own thing. And I'm very much used to Archie literally making everything about him all the time. And that's easy to stomach. But when it was like Jughead, Betty, and Veronica doing it, it was a little, I don't know, this scene was odd.
It was kind of, the scene kind of served as a purpose of getting everyone's take on the whole Pops situation. So apparently Pops' diner is like going out of business because of the tragedy that happened to it. Archie has made it very clear he doesn't want to go to Pops. Obviously has like PTSD from that place, as you
would.
Which
we see later, yeah.
Yeah. Betty doesn't want to see Pops go and is very sad about it and is definitely on the whole like cause train again. She's got a cause. But Jughead is too busy to be a champion right now because he's got his own stuff going on. He's got a lot going on.
The thing that bugs me about this, and this is all small, easy TV show stuff, but it's like notes for creators, if you're listening, if you're going to do this plot line and make us care about it, show us Pops struggling up to this point because, I mean, they fill out every scene with extras all the time. So our only visual clue on this up to this point was, wow, Pops makes all the money in the world all the time. And everyone throws fundraisers there. And it seems like instantly he's like, actually, I don't know how money.
It is a pretty like, I mean, we don't know what the timeline of all this happening is, sure. But it is a very quick, like he's suddenly out of business.
I'm pretty sure there's insurances in place for like if someone is shot in your restaurant to at least cover the time after for the business you're going to lose as a result of, you know, attempted murder.
One would think. The scene ends with Ronnie offering to help save Pops. And that's about it. That's all the scene serves as a purpose. It's just kind of them all kind of setting their status report on like Facebook. So then we go to the sheriff's office. Oh, because Jughead needs to go to meet his dad's lawyer, and Archie wants to go and find
To continue stalking OCP is essentially.
Yeah, which he succeeds because he gets there and finds OCP and kind of tries to offer his quote-unquote services.
Literally not an adult, but you know, cannot be a cop.
You know what a 15-year-old can add to a murder case.
A 15-year-old that does look 30, to be fair.
That's planned. And we do get kind of a hint of something happened in Greendale that now Sheriff has to go and check out, which we all know what that is. It was Grundy's situation. And we go into FP's meeting with his lawyer to hear, they're curious to hear about the plea bargain, the deal that obviously FP will be weighing in on.
But they don't reveal, they like set it all up, but then don't reveal it in the scene and then reveal it two scenes later in a much less interesting setting, which I thought was odd.
Jughead is there and he's very much looming and is like even like slowly asking like how many.
So we'll spoil it for you because we're not going to make you wait. It's 20 years. It's on
20
the
years.
20 versus 40 if it goes to trial.
Yeah.
But Jughead seems oddly assured of the town screwing him over and trying to get rid of him. And I'm like, so he has a lot of actual crimes on the list here.
That's the problem, is that FP did really bad stuff. Like, did he kill someone? No. Did he do a lot of stuff that's very illegal? And did he do stuff involving a dead body? Yes.
Yeah.
So, bro, yeah.
Including drug trafficking and other things. Like, 20 seems lenient.
Yeah. Disposal of a body after a murder, that's bad.
Although Cheryl saves the day on this one. We'll get to that in a bit, but go Cheryl. Anyway, so we cut to
the Andrews house.
Is this where Archie answers the door without a shirt?
No, that's later on, and okay. I have that noted. You will always know.
I just wrote Archie being swole. I don't know.
Oh, because he almost levels Jughead with a bat when Jughead comes in the back door to reveal the 20-year thing with his dad. And basically Jughead and Archie are both scared for their futures involving their dads, but they're different things that they're scared of.
And we get a glimpse of Hab, as I'm calling him, the hooded angry boy, the H-A-B, Hab. His name's Hab. The hooded, the guy, the shooter, the killer, the murderer, Zodiac. Oh,
the diamond hole dude.
Yeah, he's H-A-B.
Okay. I like that. I can go with that.
So hooded angry boy.
Hooded angry boy sounds like a boss in like some Dark Souls mod.
It actually was. That's my mod.
We go to the Coopers.
The Foosh first. Thank you. Foosh.
I'll do it.
Riverdale. There you go.
That's like our little bit of ASMR we have right in the middle of all of our episodes.
Foosh, thank you for tuning in to Riverdale today. I am your host, Michael Newman, and Foosh. Everyone foosh in me. Okay, I'll stop.
I'm so uncomfortable.
Really? I thought you were the most comfortable.
No. You are not my ASMR. I'm sorry.
No one has ever said anything meaner to me. Oh, my heart. My heart.
All right. So we go to the Coopers where it's a very quick scene that pretty much ends in Betty needs to call Ronnie because she's worried about Archie because she doesn't see him actually sleeping in his room. This is then where we go to the Andrews and we get our shirtless Archie. And I'm really appreciating how much they're really just checking that off the box every episode.
I wrote the note, Archie, of course, answers the door. He answers the door abs first. God, I wish I'd gotten that out while you were still drinking. It would have been very funny. But yeah, it, like what a weird.
I feel like that's how they would actually write it in the screenplay.
excuse me, when it's on television, it is called a teleplay, not a screenplay.
I didn't know that.
You do now.
You're a smart guy.
I am. That's why when story by credits are separated, it says teleplay by.
Oh. Well, teleplay would have said Archie shoved those abs out there first. Yeah.
Archie's abs answer the door, followed closely by the rest of him.
Just one will notice, though, there is a time difference. Ronnie's there to be girlfriend, check on Archie. Archie then, when they go for a walk, kind of confesses about his whole vigil thing that he's been doing and how he's dealing with that. And Ronnie's like actually a really good girlfriend, has some good advice in this scene.
She does. She tells him like, hey, therapy is a thing. Is that this scene?
Yeah.
She tells him to maybe go see a therapist because he has PTSD for real. Obviously, understandably.
He had a gun to his head and then saw someone shoot his dad.
And she knows that he's probably just going to say, and then not go to therapy like an idiot. But she does offer at least talk to the school counselor. And it's like, the school counselor hasn't talked to you yet? Oh my God. Your dad was almost murdered. Your ex-girlfriend was then murdered. And it's like, hello? Maybe someone should be like, hey, bud, you in there? You okay?
So it's a really good Ronnie scene. So she gets some points in my books for that one. Then we go to the courthouse where Betty and Jughead corner the mayor.
In an immaculate dress.
She's looking good. And they're trying to get her to help with the whole pop saving thing. They throw out ideas like make it a landmark or make a Pops Day a holiday that we can all rally behind. And pretty much the word that summarizes how the mayor is in this scene is sucks. She sucks in this scene.
It's always been sort of a theme on this show where characters will get together, come to a seed of an idea, not a whole idea. Because they're like, we should say Pops. Maybe we had a day or something. It's like, okay, you've kind of started digging. Don't immediately go to the most powerful person and badger them. Maybe, I don't know, workshop some of these ideas for a moment. And yeah, the mayor sucks. But like, it takes a lot of work for the mayor to lose the high ground in this scene. Which is something the show does all the time. People come in unprepared and then still leave on top because the other person is even more unprepared or even more of a jackass.
Yeah, but it is a bit, it does get uncomfortable quick because after the whole Pops stuff is shot down by the mayor, whose reasons are not like logistics or like just anything like that. It's really just self-preservation.
Yeah.
Her own like image with the set, with the town, which that's what sucks about it.
It sucks because like no one in that entire town was like, oh yeah, Pops is the reason Fred got shot.
Yeah.
Like, no, that would have happened anywhere. I don't.
Yeah. And so then Jughead turns around and is like, then tries to get the mayor to help with his dad.
Yeah, like not even the deck you came in, like not even the same game, dude. You guys really got to, I mean, you're kids, so I get it, but
yeah. Oof. And it really ends with like a very foreboding line in the sand moment with Jughead like almost like pointing the finger going, "Mayor McCoy, you remember this moment."
That's like, continue, sorry.
No, go for it.
I was going to say, I really wanted Michigan J. Frog to like lean in and be like, "Hey, you got no dukes here, dude. You have no collateral." And then just kind of play himself out. Cause I mean, it's Michigan J. Frog. He has to.
So that's how that ends with a very angry Jughead.
But he gives her an ultimatum without actually a goal to achieve within that ultimatum.
Yeah. Then we go to one of the strangest scenes ever in Riverdale.
The jangle.
We are not only introduced to a new character, but then we are given a more full-fledged scene of an old character that now has a new actor. So literally we have a scene that is two people we don't know.
Yeah, and I was thinking about this because I remember they recast and we were talking about it last week. You see Reggie, but he's so much still the exact same douche that is not listening to whoever's talking to him. It didn't take me that long to acclimate to this Reg.
It did feel weird to have a scene introduced by a new character. Usually new characters are brought into scenes, and so we are introduced to Midge.
We're flirting with the whole Nikki and Paolo thing from Lost, where they're just like, and these people have been here the whole time, definitely.
Yeah, you know, Midge, your favorite.
Yeah. Paolo, you know.
She's so small. She was always just hiding behind everybody, but she was there. She was there the whole time.
She doesn't last long.
She doesn't last long, but she's Midge is there and with the new Reggie, and she's looking for some of that jingle jangle. You know, kids, you love that jingle jangle.
So the new drug on the street, and I'm guessing this is because the other gang was called Jingle Jangle, and they have to be the one. And by the way, if you're a gang, I don't know if we have any gang members out there. If you're in a gang and you're trafficking drugs, and I don't really want to be giving you advice on this. Maybe don't name the drug after your gang. I'm just throwing that out there.
Hi, we're the Cocaines, and we're here to F you up.
But they're the Jingle Jangles. Not only, like, it was already a bad gang name and a bad drug name, and they're like, well, we got to make it a drug, too. So Jingle Jangle is the new hot drug on the street. It's an upper.
It's an upper that gives you a boner.
It keeps you awake for 48 hours. I didn't catch the boner thing, but...
Well, here's where I connected the boner, was...
That's a sentence.
When Archie in the next scene asks for uppers from Reggie because he's trying to stay awake, Reggie says it keeps you up in more than one way. And he gives a little finger symbol of like a pee-pee.
I was staring down writing notes, so...
Also, Midge asks for this drug for her and her quote-unquote boyfriend, Moose, which they then later take the drugs while they're right before they're about to have an amorous encounter. So this is somehow some sort of
miracle drug, like,
and gives you them good, strong, you know, schlong times.
As far as I can tell, they cut crystal meth with
Viagra,
like a boner pill. But like actually cut it with bleach and shit. And my guess is they're just doing whatever it, cause the thing is, here's the thing. You don't need to sell boner pills to high schoolers. Like, what are you doing?
What I thought was that that specifically they were selling boner pills to these two because Moose is like closet homosexual. And so
is that
maybe he was,
still the implication on the table?
I don't know. I was trying to make sense of this, so maybe
no,
he
I
just
was
needed-
too. But my implication was that he was just so sexual that he was just like an uber bisexual. He's just like, no legs.
Oh,
I'm
maybe.
In. That was my takeaway.
Then maybe he just wanted to have a really really good hard one. I don't know.
We have gone too far down this rabbit hole.
I don't know how like a 16-year-old boy that's the size of him would need assistance. All I remember of when I started getting boners was just not being able to get rid of them.
Was that the too much information though? Is that getting the TMI sign? There, yep. Okay. Anyway.
Go to the newspaper room.
So is this Betty's mom?
Yeah. So no, we go to.
Oh, this is just the Scoobies in the newspaper room talking about.
Yeah, Betty starts the conversation. We can't let the terrorists win. And
yeah, that was like okay. I mean, that guy. I guess. I mean, he seems more like a serial killer, a la the Zodiac killer at this point. Though they don't know that they're connected yet, so the Scoobies really don't know what they're doing at all.
But. Ronnie kind of asks why Betty, this is like her hill that she's going to die on, because it just seems a bit odd to make this all about a diner. And Betty kind of has a nice like reason behind it. All of her memories are in Pops, all of her like fond memories.
Yeah.
And most importantly, her first kiss with Jug. What's that?
Okay, Pops. So quick question.
What?
Is Pops the only restaurant in Riverdale?
Yes.
Because one, that would seem that it would never go out of business. Like, if I was in Riverdale, I'd be like, wait a minute. What if I opened a second restaurant? Like, because it is essentially the Riverdale Applebee's at this point is Pops.
Yeah. I think Riverdale is both the biggest and smallest city in the country. And so I don't really know if they need or have more than one restaurant. It's like, I don't know. It's very, their economy is kind of befuddling.
They're like one day away from the National Guard showing up to deal with their like ridiculous murder problem.
Yeah. For population. People keep dying in your town. We're going to come and help.
Yeah. Dear the White House, I know you love talking shit about Chicago. You should be talking about Riverdale. Donald Trump, get your eyes on Riverdale. I think you'd be very surprised. A lot of murders there. A lot of murders. Just so many murders.
Now I'm torn whether or not I want to know Donald Trump's opinion on Riverdale.
God. Literally brings the entire show to a standstill, because now I'm just like, oh, wow, yeah.
I don't... Oh, okay, we got... No, we can't sit on that. That's just too big of an egg
I didn't need to know his opinion on Applebee's, for example. Like, loves it. Duh.
Duh. Hiram shows up at the school.
Yeah, and, whoa, like, crazy move.
And Hiram wants Ronnie to meet him halfway. He's trying to connect with his daughter. And
he's
Ronnie...
seemingly trying to connect.
Yeah, I know.
I was on his team through this episode, and now I am not. We'll get there, but I'm definitely not on his team.
He sort of starts winning you over, and then he goes, haha, tricked you. Ronnie kind of explains that she knows too much. She's seen behind the curtain. She can't just go back to, like, you know, meeting halfway, because she sees him as this huge villain.
Which he is.
Yes, obviously. And Hiram kind of ends it with offering to help in any way he can with the Pops thing. He's trying to, like, you know, he's trying to connect with his daughter.
Here's an interesting thought. What mythological demonic creature do you think ate Hermione's soul? Because where did it go?
I think it was Hiram, who now contains her soul within, I don't know, the tattoo on his arm that we saw at the beginning of the episode. We also got Hiram guns early on in this episode, so he's stacked. Cool. Yeah, Hermione is like a familiar at this point to Hiram.
I'm waiting for her dementors to show up at the house and suck all the joy out of Veronica every time she shows up.
We go to some sort of like alleyway kind of thing where Jughead has a meeting with Tallboy, the long-haired serpent dude, and tries to talk to Tallboy about busting Dad out of prison.
So they cannot slow down their necessity for felony. Like, the Scoobies are just all going to be in jail forever at the rate they're going.
They're kind
so
of addicted.
I need you guys to, like, maybe take I don't know, a jingle jangle and maybe just clean your house all night. I don't know. But you all need to cool it.
With a boner.
I don't think the main point is the boner.
I think it is to me.
It doesn't seem like you're getting much jingle jangle at that point. Wow, we've gone totally off the rails. So anyway, we
Tall Boy says that he's got someone Jughead needs to meet.
Yeah, so that's Jughead basically is now a felon.
Again.
Betty and Veronica show up to the Vixens, which now Josie is on, and Cheryl tries to take back, but I guess kind of forgets that she gave it to Veronica at the end of last season.
But then, oddly enough, Veronica just goes with it. So Cheryl is now just default back in charge. Yeah.
She is still very solidly in the villain category after last week. So,
yes.
Although she does do a nice thing. She really is just like chaotic neutral at this point. She's doing the most heinous good and bad things, but they just sort of even out to, it's okay.
Yeah. Betty asks Cheryl for the help with the Vixens for this whole Pops thing she's throwing together, this retro night, to try to save the only restaurant in town. And Cheryl, who's the queen of one-liners in this whole episode, tells her the answer is a double cherry on top, no, and turns her down pretty harshly.
Yeah.
We are still in the school, and the principal decides to tell one single class instead of like over the announcements
now,
or anything.
Was he not aware of Miss Grundy and Archie? I thought he did know.
I think the only people who know about Grundy were the parents.
Okay.
Because it was that one awkward meeting in the music room that ended it. There's few people in this episode that we learned the first time they're hearing about this. Which amazes me that that didn't just become everyone's
It was only the one town over, and it was a former teacher. Everyone would know.
Well, I mean, even just the whole Archie and Grundy thing, I'm amazed that not everyone even knew about that, because everything just spreads and everyone tells everyone information.
So Archie's ex-girlfriend was murdered, and he has not a great time with this info.
Yeah.
For not surprising reasons.
I wrote down, I'm starting to really feel bad for Archie because this boy has got some rough times.
Archie starts to put together that all of this is probably about him.
Fred. He can't help.
And which is the call I made last week, and I think it's pretty much confirmed this week, but it is very much about Archie. Fred is very cool about this information when he goes, because Archie runs out and goes home.
Yeah.
And Fred is like, hey, bud, remember I got shot last week, so I'm still not doing great. But he doesn't have any answers because he's just like, oh, God, it really is about him.
He doesn't know how to do to help. And so he's just, they're both scared and confused.
Well, because it also got him shot. But it very much is not about Fred. So
we go to a tattoo shop where Jughead meets another new character.
Oh, Penny Peabody. She was in the comics. That is Fang's girlfriend.
Who's Fang?
He's one of the gang members in the Serpents.
Oh, okay. So they
is Fang not the guy with the longer hair?
That's Tall Boy.
Okay. Well, Fang's
that's
what
he called
him.
What he called him in it.
We might not have met him. I don't know. So
whatever.
Yeah,
she's from the comics.
A serpent, and Fang's a serpent. So
she is a serpent that the serpents put through college and law school as someone to help them with their legal difficulties.
That is such a mob move.
It's good. I'll point out that in this scene, when she pointed that out, I couldn't figure out why then she wasn't FP's lawyer, but then that's kind of answered near the end of this episode, why she wouldn't be his lawyer.
She acts like she's altruistic and she's there for the gang, but that is not the case, I think, with her. She very much seems like not a good... If FP's this scared of her, something's wrong.
I'm very excited about her. I really want to know what she like. I love this kind of character, and so I'm very excited.
I love the Batman nomenclature of these, like Penny Peabody is such with Vicky Vale.
There's actually a few very Batman-esque themes in this episode.
It's just that was an old comics thing. They were easy to remember if both names started with the same letter. So if you go back, all of the comics used to do that.
Oh yeah, that was Stan Lee's entire It's Bruce Banner and Reed Richards and Susan Storm and I mean we
and
can
Susan
go on.
Sarandon, huge yeah, Marvel Susan. Character that one.
Peabody gives some help to Jug and says that if he can get the victim's parents to forgive FP in front of a judge, it could help almost to the point of maybe FP getting time served. But
which was good advice.
Very it was good advice. The downside is this whole thing comes with a not a payment that Jughead needs to give to Peabody for this help, but in more of a quid pro quo kind of thing that he now owes a favor.
But that was just info? Like this was odd to me as well. Cause like she didn't do enough for a favor to me to like owe him forever or something. This seems like really obvious. I just don't know how you're gonna come collect on that.
Yeah.
Like, he clearly did not know what was going on. Like, if you're going to make someone sign a deal with you, the devil, at least let them know they're signing a deal with you, the devil.
Yeah.
Because it looked like you were just being a nice person and said, do this, yeah. do this. Because he still had to do all the legwork and do the hard part. She didn't do yeah. anything.
We go to the Cooper's house where, if I'm not mistaken, I believe Alice referred to Archie and Betty by a ship name and says, "You're twitching, Blarchy." She calls them Blarchy.
That's such a good portmanteau of their. No, because there's no L in her name.
Yeah, I don't know why she said that. I couldn't figure it out.
It's someone hilarious in, sounding. I don't know. Blarchy is now what
back,
they are.
I went back and I was like, did she just say Blarchy?
We now have to call them Blarchy. Like, we have no options on the table.
If you guys want to like use the hashtag Crimey Riverdale and please answer why the hell she said Blarchy for me, I'd really appreciate that. Archie tells Alice his theory on the killer. That it's the same person.
Which does remind us that these crimes, like, we know that these two crimes are connected. So we're like,
we saw the hoodie.
But we're 1,000 steps ahead of the characters and we really need them to catch up mm-hmm. to us a bit. Cause he's like, I think these might be connected. And everybody's like, oh, Archie.
Yeah.
Oh.
He wants details on Grundy's death and refers to how Betty refers to how Alice was able to get details on Jason's murder before everyone else, and so Alice says, "I'll reach out to my ghoulish friend," says she'll help. She also points out that Betty is spreading herself pretty thin right now, and because Betty's like helping Archie and she's helping Pops, and Betty's doing everything, and then also lets the information fly that Pops is selling his shop to an anonymous buyer, and she's heavily insinuating that it's like the same MO the lodges did with the construction site, with the drive-in, and that's that scene.
Yeah, and then we go to the lodges where I've actually there is a new segment here. I need to basically alter an old one because Betty's mom is now normal, like a normal human person because I just feel like I'd be giving her points all the time. I am no longer counting the BM count. She is now just a mom, and Alice is doing great. However,
congratulations, Alice.
Hermione is now the new BM, and she is starting in -1 because of this scene. Holy moly.
It's a bad scene.
It just gets worse.
Betty tells Ronnie over the phone what's going on. So Ronnie puts two and two together and confronts Daddy and Mommy at dinner that Hiram's buying the place, to which Hiram says he's not buying it.
She comes in guns blazing with no info. Like this is a move they make every time. And it's like, you guys really need to take a moment.
Yeah. It's almost like they're impulsive teenagers.
Yeah. Well, sure. But I mean, they got to make some good decisions at some point.
Hiram's not buying it, but he just wants to talk to Ronnie and even kind of like, you're here at dinner. Sit down. Let's talk. And Ronnie's just like, all right, let's talk about Fred Andrews.
She puts the trump card right on the table.
And points out the whole shooting coincidence of the timing of mm-hmm. asking Fred to sell his stuff.
And their vested interest in him getting shot.
Yeah, Hiram flat out says he didn't kill him, didn't hire anybody to kill him. It wasn't him. And Ronnie kind of has this breakdown moment where she kind of confesses to her dad that she was his biggest defender, you know, leading all the way up. She felt so betrayed because she was on daddy's side this whole time while he was in prison. And then she gets this threatening letter from Hiram that she pulls out that Hermione, quote unquote, never saw. And she says, like, and she's trying to, like, she's a little bit of a play to, like, try to get Hermione back on Ronnie's side. Like, she's definitely like, Mom, look what Dad did. Let's shun him. And Hermione, not missing a beat, tells
Ronnie. She misses one beat because she takes a second to be like, am I really about to do this? Jump on somebody else's grenade here.
She confesses to writing the letter and...
She takes credit for it.
She takes credit for it, to which I think everybody watching the show at this point was like, Hermione's lying right now.
Yeah, if, like, I had popcorn, I just broke my screen with it. I was throwing it so hard. but yeah, so Hermione jumps on the Hiram grenade.
Yep.
And she's very much a despicable monster. You chose your con of an ex-husband over your own daughter. I hope you get yours very soon.
You two deserve each other.
They have crossed the line. Like, totally a sane, awesome character last season is now insane.
Yes. We go to the Thistle House.
Or as I call it, Grey Gardens.
The Thistle House is now my new favorite location in Riverdale.
Oh, God. They just need, Cheryl, like, a big sign that says dysfunction above the door.
Just like a blaring neon sign.
Open 24 hours.
Cheryl opens the door to Jughead and Betty and says, Hobo, bride of Hobo. And it's fantastic. Yes, I love Cheryl, and she's my girl. And I just wrote down this line. Is Cheryl living in a Batman villain's house? Because this thing, they go to this.
She even had, her mom has the hat now. It is Grey Gardens. Like, they're just going to live there until they're 60, and they're going to be best friends, even though they hate each other. Because they don't want to hang out with anybody else, and they have no choices. They are Grey Gardens.
It's just going to be Cheryl feeding her mom soup and talking about the gossip of the day. Yeah. So they go into this dining room / ivied up garden house that's fantastic. Jughead and Betty are there to take Peabody's advice and ask for help from the Blossoms. The Blossoms are 100% not keen on helping him.
Well, they call FP a loose end. And I was like, dude, he didn't do the thing. Like, your husband did the thing. So, I don't know. Maybe put it all behind you. Maybe. Maybe.
Thinking
out loud.
Just throwing things against the wall. See what sticks. Are you drinking out of just a 2-liter bottle of Dr.
Pepper? No, it's a 1-liter bottle. Oh, okay. It's a 1-liter bottle.
A 1-liter.
It's a big bottle.
Mama Blossom is literally like, she wants to see FP fry.
Which is like, he didn't kill anybody. That's not even on the table.
Yeah, they're kind of a little bit overly vindictive about this
whole
thing.
Well, she's vindictive, but obviously against Cheryl. So at least I understand. I mean, her daughter did, like, try to burn her up. Completely. Yes. So I get why she's a little out of sorts at the moment.
Yeah, Betty and Jughead leave. And Jughead even calls out, like, due to the harshness of what happened there, that Cheryl has gone poison ivy. So there was even a Batman reference to this.
Well, I mean, in the green had the overgrown greenhouse is like the poison ivy mood.
Called the Thistle House. I love the branding of this family. This family, for all of their dysfunction, has branding down tight.
I mean, they ran a maple syrup empire.
They got it.
And a drug empire. And you got to brand drugs. Like, ask any ex-dealer, man. You got to put the right stamp on there, I've heard. I don't know.
Can't just call them Jingle Jangle or else you're stuck with that name. Go to the coroner's office, meet our little friend coroner from last season. Good old villain from Legion as well. He's good in that show. Yeah. Everyone should watch that. And basically, the scene summarized is that the coroner's like, she was strangled by her beau, and it was a crime of passion. And
yeah,
hatred.
That was an odd reach for him to make, that it was that he saw from the marks on her that it was a crime of passion. Because it's like, we already know that it wasn't.
Yeah, I think he, Yeah, I guess it wasn't a crime of passion. I think it was he was trying to point out that the person who killed her wanted to be close when she died, wanted to be the one that was like, it wasn't.
But
just
you can't
like,
tell that from bruising. Like, it's not.
He said there was a struggle, so the guy got up close. I don't know. I don't know stuff.
It doesn't feel very professional coroner wise to just.
Well, I don't think he's a very professional coroner.
Clearly not.
We go to the Andrews where Reggie literally shows up to his door as a prank.
In a mask.
And,
like, hello, dude. Archie could have shot you, dog. Like, what are you doing?
Archie tackles that mother. And but Reggie's there to give him drugs, which is awesome as well. It's good times. I'm glad everyone's just making good decisions.
That's what I do. I always dress up like a prank whenever I deliver drugs to my clients.
But Reggie actually has a smart thought when Archie tackles him. He's like, what if I was the real guy? Would you just tackle me? And Archie's like, yeah. And Reggie's like,
yeah. Reggie's like, buy a gun, idiot. And Archie's like, yes, that'll fix all of our problems. More guns.
At least he points out that only a dumbass lunatic brings a baseball bat to a gunfight, which is logic, but not logic we should be given to Archie right now. He's not in a really good place for that.
It's not
stuff.
Really his job.
Well, yeah, Reggie's a man.
And also,
many...
if somebody's breaking into your house, the bat versus the gun, the bat's probably a better choice.
It's still a viable weapon in that kind of a close proximity situation.
Plus, you know, you shoot him once, he's not going down. It's Archie.
Once.
You're shooting that guy like six times in the chest, and maybe he's getting like on the floor, but
two will bounce off his abs.
That's true. Just right through the eye, kills the.
Ding, ding.
There's only four episodes of the season. He tries to kill him, and Archie's just like.
We go to the next day at the Archies, where not at the Archies, at the Andrews, and Alice brings news of Grundy's demise.
Yeah, that was.
And points out that it was a different town, different murder weapon, and kind of convinces Archie that this might not have been the same guy.
And she's saying smart things, but again, we already know he's right.
Right.
Like, there's an extent you can lie to your audience. I'm pointing that out as constructive criticism.
Which I still don't 100% buy into your theory, but I just want to point that out.
What theory? Which part?
The theory of what this killer is doing. And who this killer is, and what they're.
I don't have a theory about that. I'm just saying.
Oh, but
like,
you think it's a vendetta?
You can't. Do you ever see the movie M. Night Shyamalan's The Village?
Yeah.
Do you remember after they reveal that Adrian Brody is actually the monster? They do monster scenes after that, and it still makes the monster noises, and the audience goes, ugh. Like,
yeah.
If you've already revealed something, don't then try to convince your audience that it's the other thing. If we already know, that's 100% of my criticism.
Okay, 100% agree with that.
Okay, that's all.
I still love
this show as well.
Well, I still love you.
Oh, I love you too.
There we go. I was waiting for that. We go to Pops, and we find out that it's not Hiram Chugmo Liquor Store. Not the best name for a liquor store.
I feel like Jughead's going to spend a lot of his nights at the Chugmo later in life.
You know, you can either go to Chugmo Liquor Store or Drink-A-Lot Liquor Store. Yeah. Those are both
Drink-Mo.
Places. Yeah. Get Drunk Liquor Store. So they're buying Pops. Jughead asks for kind of a last supper request from Pop to make his dad's favorite meal because his dad's going to go to jail and he wants him to be able to have Pop's food one more time. Betty goes full Betty and says this is unacceptable and gets on the warpath, even pulls out a bit of a Star Wars line and says, I can fix this. And she tells Pops, like, don't sell, don't sign. And she's like, she's determined that she can figure this out.
She's Betty. She's been right every time. So, I mean, everyone should be like, yep, that's Betty.
Yeah, that's Betty. We go to the locker room where we get a shirtless Cheryl for like the entire scene.
I'm sure that was good for some people. I was like, where'd her shirt go? Where's the shirt?
Where'd it go? Which made me realize that this might be one of the only like shows I've ever watched where it's like, yeah, they have the guy shirtless a lot more than the girls. I just wanted to applaud Riverdale.
The equal opportunity of Riverdale. Yeah. I noticed that the stitching on her bra was very intricate. Like, that's what I was paying attention to. It's like, who are you wearing, Cheryl?
Please tell.
Is that Gooch? It's got to be Gooch.
Don't say, is that Gooch? Don't ever say that to anybody.
I'm going to drink my 1 liter of Dr. Pepper.
Where are we at? Oh, we're in the locker room. Betty decides to blackmail Cheryl with her father's murder son video that she made a copy of off the thumb drive.
Which she did. She's like, I have a copy and it's on Jughead's laptop in this directory and you'll never find it. Like, don't... If you have a secret copy, don't tell them where it is. I don't.
Yeah. She goes full like villain mode here because like
she
does. Like,
she overplayed her hand as well. But yeah, full extortion mode is good Betty mode. Good.
Even
Betty mode.
Cheryl goes like, is this blackmail? And Betty's like, no, this is fun girl talk.
Right.
And just kind of convinces Cheryl to go along with this, says it's a nice ending to a sad story. If we can just get FP closure and get him taken care of and you guys can have this video and know it's gone. So she, and then also in this, she throws the Vixens being a part of the retro night for Pops as part of this deal. Like, she's fully extorting everything she can out of Cheryl right now.
And she knows that Cheryl is smart enough and has low enough standards to really put, like, she needs Cheryl to basically hit a walk-off homer here on the stand, and does.
Yes.
Very excited by Cheryl in this whole thing.
Yeah. I couldn't tell, but I think Cheryl was even, like, impressed by Betty by the end of this scene, because even when she ended the scene, she said, you're a stone-cold bitch, Betty Cooper, but she almost had, like, a glint of a proud smile.
Yeah, there was a little, like, it was almost like she was like, you're a stone-cold bitch, Betty Cooper, hashtag squad goals. Like, that was what I imagined coming out of her, because it was a term of endearment, and I never say that word, but it did come off that way, so I'm give it to him. You got me to say it. It must have been something good.
We go to the newspaper where Jughead offers to help Ronnie with her druthers. He has even a great way of introducing himself. He's like, I might not be a redhead with muscles or even a blonde with a ponytail, but he's like, I'm here to talk if you need someone to talk to.
But if you need someone to dress like the 1992 smash hit singles or Reality Bites, if you need anyone to be like, you know what 1993 Pearl Jam looks are in, I got
right
you
right here.
I got you. Flannel all day.
Ronnie basically asks him how he was able to get back behind supporting his dad after his dad doing very not good but dad things.
Yeah. And I think FP did make, I mean, he says that FP made a effort to change, but it went both ways. Like, they went through a crucible, so to speak, together. And I think that drew them back together. Whereas I think Hiram and Veronica are about to go through their own, only I think they're going to be on opposite sides.
Yeah, I can think we can all see that coming. We go to the sheriff's office where Archie...
makes it about him. Why not?
He does. He accuses that maybe it was the ex-lover that killed Grundy, kind of confesses to having that situation with Grundy with the...
He pulls back without going all the way. Because he's about to say, oh, because that was my girlfriend, but realizing... Oh, that's a felony, and even posthumously, that's not going to look great, is it?
Yeah.
You are the sheriff.
Points out, I didn't make this connection, that his cello bow that he gave to
was the murder.
Grundy was the murder weapon. That hurts.
It was like slide whistle.
Yeah.
Just it's not coming up Archie today.
No, because then the sheriff points out that he already did talk to the ex. The ex has an airtight alibi. And Archie ends this very sad scene saying, maybe I am going crazy. And even at this point, he's like getting like a little bit of stubble. And he's looking very frayed. And it's just like,
yeah, definitely a 15-year-old's beard on that guy.
I knew these 15-year-olds can totally have beards. Not me.
Yeah, definitely not me.
I'm a 33-year-old who's still trying.
35.
We go to the courthouse.
Yes, my Cheryl favorite scene thing. In the episode, because Jughead finally gets a win.
And Thank Cheryl you, is show. Like, yeah, she is a team player. When she commits to something, she commits to it.
Yeah, lying under oath is kind of a big step. You might not have fully thought through, but go Cheryl.
So she starts off with her testimony, and even her testimony of her like forgiving FP is even just a good delivery and performance. The judge is a dick. Just to me, that's my personal opinion. Probably legally he's within his rights, but John's hot take, he's not cool.
Well, the info that Jughead has gotten from, what was her name? Jellybean Johnson. Was it Peabody?
Peabody.
Anyway, Jellybean Johnson. No, she gave them information that apparently makes Jughead her servant for the rest of time, which turns out not even to be true. Yeah. Because they do that exact thing, and Cheryl, under oath, forgives FP for what he did to their family, and the judge says, nah, not good enough. He still did all these other crimes that you can't. Which feels like a thing maybe we should have known before going in the courtroom. One of your lawyers would have known.
Maybe.
But Cheryl doesn't miss a beat, and she's like, I think that my dad told him to do a lot of stuff or he's going to kill Jughead. Which isn't untrue, because like there were threats from Mr. Blossom to both Fred and FP to do certain things, and there were a lot of threats from FP or from Mr. Blossom to FP. So even though she thought she was totally lying, I don't think she was totally lying, because I think at one point Mr. Blossom did threaten Jughead if FP did not do a certain thing.
Yeah, she kind of was, it's almost like unknowingly stumbling on the truth without even being aware of it. But it works.
Yep.
Judge is like, we have to delay the sentence to really kind of take this into account. And so it's not a full on solution, but it's a delay, which is a win.
It's a huge win.
Then we go to Pops for quite a while.
Yeah, BM shows up first.
Retro night is empty, and Alice shows up and is there to have a milkshake and write her article, Requiem for Pops.
She's still trying to get that title back, but like you are laps behind Hermione at this point, BM. Hang it up. Just hang it up. You're not. I'm going to write a really mean article about a diner I don't like for no reason. Oh, cool. I'm going to extort my own daughter.
Get on my level.
She's just like, bye.
Betty. Oh, yeah. And then so like that's how the night starts. And then we find out that Betty promised that the Pussycats were going to perform without actually asking the
Terrible
Pussycats.
Terrible move. Yeah. Terrible move, Betty.
Betty's just like pulling all of the she's not pulling any punches. She's like,
she doesn't want any friends anymore when this is all over.
Josie's not happy with this and even points out that they're kind of down one of their Pussycat dolls because she has. What did she have? She had some sort of sickness.
I don't know.
But Cheryl steps in.
Yeah, because Cheryl is qualified to do three-part harmony on a cover of Milkshake. Well, yeah.
But luckily she does step in because then we do get a Milkshake cover.
And it is amazing. Like, don't let me throw shade. It was incredible.
It really makes me like it. I like we don't get enough music in this show. Like every time they do
used
music,
to.
Yeah, like the Pussycat singing and everything. But even like near the end of I know it'd like totally be weird near the end of that last season to have a lot more music. But I'm like every time they do it, I like it.
I want them to go back to that really old WB network, like on Roswell or Dawson's Creek, where you'd watch the episode and then at the end that guy comes on and they're like, Dawson Creek features music by, and then it's like Third Eye Blind.
Blur. I think I learned like half of the bands Switchfoot. I listened to during that age. Yeah.
Yeah. It was always Switchfoot. That was like the WB go-to.
I learned about Ingrid Michaelson from Grey's Anatomy. So you can get good music from shows. I like her. They have their little sing-song on the roof of Pops. It's fantastic.
Very Beatles. Very, very au courant in the
very
60s.
Very Beatles, very U2. Archie shows up and he's having a rough time. He actually goes into Pops, which I was very surprised to see him do.
Well, he's having some severe flashbacks outside.
Oh, he
and
sees
I'm like,
roller
no one
skates
sees
going,
this?
Yeah, he sees roller skates going through blood where they were, and
he's actually getting Shining level premonitions where I'm like, maybe you should see a bartender. Get it? Because The Shining. You guys get no. Nobody's shaking their head. No
one's ever seen that movie.
No one's in my house. That might be why.
Then why did I just see someone walk behind you, Mikey?
Don't do that. Don't. Now I'm gonna put a mirror up here, so I have like a rear view mirror above my monitor, so I can see behind me.
After Archie shows up and gets escorted to a booth for a milkshake, the Lodges then show up because we just needed them to be there.
They smelled the PTSD in the water.
They did.
Like, they are that level of supervillain now.
They are absorbing the negative emotional energy right in the room.
Where is human pain? Point us to the pain, please. Thank you.
That's
we are
sweet
the Lodges. I am evil Hermione, which I will now be known as for the rest of my... Because Hermione is such a good name now.
She is. It was.
Her initials are eh. Evil Hermione.
Ronnie, surprisingly, offers an olive branch and wants to make that night as like a kind of restart of their family.
She got guilted into it pretty hard, though. I mean, her reasoning for wanting to patch it up were Jughead saying, my dad's going to jail and Archie's almost died, so maybe you should make an effort because your dad's right there. And it was like, first of all, her dad was already in jail, so let's at least like set the bar where it goes, guys. But, ugh.
Yeah, and Hiram plays it perfectly because he doesn't even like give a jump of glee. He's even like, if that's what you want, Miha, then yes, let's do that. And then he even kind of slides in that Lodge Industries is going to make a charitable contribution to Pops. He's just hitting all the right.
He's not saying that charitable contribution is actually buying it.
Yes.
But it is there.
It's all about phrasing.
The image you just painted in my head was them sitting in a poker table and he's playing against Veronica and she's like, full house. And he's like, all serpents. Like that, that's his cards.
The snakes do show up to Pops and Alice starts taking receipts.
yeah.
As she does for the rest of this episode. And Alice is like doing good.
She's a force of good now. She's chaotic good.
She's chaotic
good. But she
good.
Is good. Hermione is evil.
Yes. Jughead and Betty have a cute little moment. Jughead's looking great this entire scene in his little chef outfit. Just want to point that out. Jughead kisses Betty, and Cheryl walks up and says, you two are like chimps in captivity grooming each other.
Pulling lice out of each other's hair. Was it?
Yeah. And kind of points out that, you know, she did what she did and tells Betty to honor her promise. Then we go to Alice catching more receipts as Reggie is giving drugs at Pops.
And I'm like, I don't know what emotions to register out of this. Like, she's not wrong, but at the same time, does this really matter right now?
Yeah.
Literally, a killer is on the loose. And he's going to kill again, literally in an hour. So
in moments. Pops gives a thank you speech. Apparently the night was a success. The place is saved and even has like a nest egg if they befall bad times.
But Hiram
anymore.
Claims ownership right after this. So I don't quite... It's like Pops doesn't know that the Lodge has bought it, but how did they buy it?
I wonder if we'll get more information on that more so. Hopefully from Pops himself.
Yeah, unless he's a tenant and they're just going to evict him.
Ooh.
Which is like lame as hell. Like Hermione, you really need to maybe fight a battle you can win here.
Yeah, because then right after this speech, Hiram drops the info that as of 5 minutes ago, we own this diner. And yeah, we all called it. Hermione lied about the letter.
Okay.
And
I'm gonna put a pin on the table. I'm gonna put or on the board. Whatever. Choose your metaphor.
Mikey's just putting pins everywhere, everyone.
I think Veronica is gonna kill one of her parents before the end of the season.
Ooh.
I think she's going to have to. I think it's going to be forced upon her. And but I think she's going to have to shoot her dad.
Yeah. I mean, Hermione, if you weren't convinced of her evilness yet, this scene was literally her not only admitting to jumping on the grenade for Hiram,
but big time.
But being happy about it and happy about showing her devotion to Hiram, as in, like, I did good, didn't I, Hiram? I did good. Like, that's what she's doing. And so she is just vile.
Yeah, I'm going to set the scene. Hermione's going to realize that this is bad before the season's up. We're going to end up in a situation where she thinks she's telling her husband, I'm done doing this. He's then going to double cross her, put a gun to her head, and Veronica's going to have to kill her. To kill him to save her mom.
Yeah, that could be a total thing. Because it seems that parents just get shot in this show.
And I'm hesitating because this episode ended with... Oof.
Yes. The scene here at Pops kind of ends with the Fab Four at the booth, almost having a nice moment. But then the moment ends because Archie is having severe flashes of, like, the hooded guy and... Archie is effed up 100%, and that is what this episode is about.
But he's still attempting to buy a gun.
I mean, that's
I feel like if your dad was shot by Thing, Thing would probably also set off your triggers. I like the tile floor of Pops obviously is a thing, but more than guns?
Yeah, I think he's probably blinded with this quest to protect his dad.
Right.
It's that comes first and foremost, even beyond his PTSD.
And we go to the Jug Dub.
We go to the Thistle House.
Oh.
And two quick things happen before the Jug Dub. We go to the Thistle House where Cheryl tells her mom she has a present for her and shows her the video of Jason getting killed and thinks it will bring her peace. I don't know why.
So creepy. Well, that she has it, I guess, that they can hide the evidence and never have to watch it again. But yeah, they are in their whole own world at this point.
Then we go to a very, very sad scene where we go to the lodge residence and Smithers is gone.
Smithers is fired.
He got fired and Hiram's lying about it.
Yeah, my only notes are Smithers is gone. Someone go find John and make sure he's not standing on a roof somewhere.
Riverdale, stop it. I'm done with you. I'm gonna keep watching your wonderful
Smithers is gonna come back and he's gonna wreck face and he's gonna save the day and it's gonna be amazing.
I want it.
And Jughead immediately gets a call from his dad screaming at him about reaching out to Penny Lane, whatever her name is.
Like,
Penny.
To the point where he gives him, like, a big warning of do not be in her pocket and hangs up on Jughead.
Yeah, well, because he realized Jughead already made the mistake. He already got the info.
Yep. And then we go back to Pops for one quick second where Alice takes a moment to kind of...
tell Betty how many drug deals went down that night.
Yeah, and almost blames Betty for bringing crime to Riverdale.
Yeah, because she knows it was Reggie, and yet she blames the snakes, which is a very Riverdale thing to do. Just ask the sheriff. Then we go to Jug Dub, and we meet Dilton Doily, someone we've seen giving Archie sideways glances the entire episode, but never talking to. Because that guy had been in the entire episode, and I was like, who is this guy? I kept making notes. Who is this guy?
Right.
Because Archie looks over and sees him, and then they just move on. Like, because he's a kind of nerdy guy in a leather jacket. He's got big, big black rim glasses on.
Very much reminds you of someone from a Wes Anderson film.
Yeah. He actually just stumbled out of a Wes Anderson set.
Stumbled out to sell Archie a gun.
Did you realize that Dilton Doily, actually played by Edward Norton, completely invisible in the part. Very Wes Anderson.
Archie's got a gun. That will totally not end bad at all at any point in the show.
And he can sleep now. Archie got a gun, and now he can sleep. No one else can.
Yeah.
Because Archie has a gun.
The rest of you are screwed because a PTSD child has a handgun now. So have fun with that, Riverdale.
If you handed Archie a knife, he would 2 seconds later ask you where his other hand went. he did not have a gun.
And then we go to the forest in a car where Moose and Midge are so doing this, jingle jangles.
We're just going to go full Fincher here. Like, this turned into Zodiac.
Yeah.
So cleverly. Because I wasn't really thinking about the connection of the serial killer with the hood. But they go full Zodiac here. Zodiac MO walking up to make out points. So we see Moose in the car with the girl that was buying drugs from Reggie at the beginning.
Yeah, Midge.
I think is Moose's girlfriend. Mm-hmm. I just don't... Because remember when I talked about Moose originally, I think that was the name I talked about being his girlfriend.
Yes, you are correct there. Yeah, and so the hooded guy comes up around the car and full on, like, shining light into the car, unloads on them. Zodiac.
Yeah. I mean, it was everything about him was full MO Zodiac.
Where the one thing is that we're left with the episode ending with... him firing into the car. I'm going to assume at least one or two of them is dead. I don't know.
I imagine one of them, it looks like Moose is definitely dead, which made me very mad. Now, thing to remember, and again, when they make references, they don't generally line them up, but not the first set of victims, but the second and third set of victims to the actual Zodiac, the females were both killed in both instances, but the men were both left alive, horribly, horribly wounded. But he had a severe, like, he would concentrate on the women, which was gross. But I'm wondering, like, what they're doing here. Because I agree that one of them's probably alive. I just don't see how it could be Moose. He took a lot of bullets. By the way, this is a very rough scene to watch. Like, they did not hold back here.
Yeah.
Surprisingly.
It was very dark. I almost think that with the introduction of Midge in this episode, that she may survive to keep going.
I think we're going to see her in the hospital, and I think Moose is dead, which sucks because every time Moose is in an episode, he is the guy that gets jumped or beat up or pushed or
finds a dead body.
Literally murdered. Yeah. He's never caught a break.
Poor Moose.
But he's gone now, so pour one out for Moose.
Okay.
Bummer. Anyway, who is your star Riverdalian of the week?
I think I'm a broken record because it's Cheryl.
I am only because he got the biggest win. Like, Jughead has been pushing for this since the beginning of the show, pretty much. And he finally got the thing he's been chasing. And we're going to see what happens when that car or that dog that was chasing the car, what happens when the dog catches it.
Mm-hmm.
'Cause I think he was chasing something he thought was impossible and he has now achieved it 15 episodes later. So I feel good for him 'cause I know this is going to be short lived and his life is going to turn back into crap for some reason.
So you're on a Jug episode.
I am totally on Jug.
This season's so good. Sorry, I know broken is just constantly saying that,
it's
but I'm
doing something. I'm not quite sure what they're setting up. I'm very curious where this goes from here, but we have now set a precedent that someone will be murdered at the end of every episode. And that is scary. Like that I'm now afraid to watch the show because Moose is crossing a line where someone who has interacted with the show and done good things for our main characters has now been straight up wholly murdered, like perforated murdered. And it's really fun to watch, but I am very terrified to do so.
The Jug dub is just turning into the executioner's song at the end of the episode.
Yeah,
it's like Jughead's talking. Everyone, just turn off the show.
I feel like I should start muting it and start playing the Reigns of Castamere, just to really get it. So, should we be making a prediction on who gets murdered next week? Go for it.
Oh, I like that.
Because they've now set a pattern. I think serial killer in Riverdale, which is wholly disgusting, by the way. Like, this is scary, scary television, but you take a guess.
Dilton.
Is he big enough to met? Because now they've set, like, a bar. Because these are two characters that were speaking parts before tonight. One was a sort of forgotten one. I feel like if I was in the
you
band,
you probably have a better idea. What do you think?
If I was in Josie and the Pussycats, I'd be scared.
I was actually about to say it before I said Dylan. I was going to say a Pussycat doll.
Josie and the Pussycats. It won't be Josie.
No.
But if I was one of the other two, especially Archie's other ex-girlfriend, because like, hey, guess what doesn't have a great record right now? One of two of his girlfriends was just killed. This is so morbid and so gross, but that's the show, and I'm sorry. But yeah, I would, because what would shock the audience more than that?
That'd be bad. That'd be really.
They've
bad.
Set a pattern. There's a serial killer, and he's going to kill children. Like, this is the show.
Okay. Yeah. Give us your predictions. Hashtag Crimey Riverdale. Love to hear what you guys think. Glad you guys are listening to the show.
Not where I thought this was going to go.
Predictions like, gonna die.
Well, it just feels morbid and bad to me. But it we are a fan cast and that is the show. So but it is like morbid and weird.
Yeah. So,
but whatever. Get your votes in. We'll throw you a party if you win. I don't know what here's your prize: a piece of cheese. Let's go get it!